Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome, good morning. It was a little bit chilly this morning, warming up. We have in the studio Jonathan Bach. We have a lovely subject to talk about this morning. I'll mention it in a few moments. And just to remind you that Shabbat comes in at 5:09. Motzei Shabbat is 6:01. The Parsha is Chukat. And it was very, very interesting, Parsha. I was just speaking to Jonathan before we came on air, all about the person who becomes impure and becomes impure. The one who is making the person pure, he himself becomes impure. But there are three others in the Torah as well on the same theme. We'll talk about that in a few moments. Now, I also want to refer you to a very, very special event, because this is Reflections of the Past, which took a place in 1934 in Port Elizabeth. And that was that notorious grey shirt trial where the grey shirts, as they were known, they were very strong supporters of the Nazis, planted the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, a book, in the offices of then the Reverend Abraham Levy, who was the Reverend of the Shul in Port Elizabeth in those days. And why I'm mentioning this, because Reverend Levy's son on Wednesday, Denzel Levy, I'm sure known to many, many of you, celebrated his 100th birthday. And he was 17 years old when this happened, when they planted this book in his father's study. And, of course, there's the whole grey shirt trial. And you know who were amongst those grey shirt trialists? The leader was a chap called von Moltke, a chap called Roby Lobrandt. And afterwards, they were all found guilty. As a matter of fact, Nachum Sokolov, you know, he succeeded Theodor Herzl. And he came to South Africa. He gave evidence. They won the case. I'm not going to go into the details of the Protocols of Elders of Zion, because I've written an article which will appear, please God, in next week's Jewish Report. Okay. And I'm also paying a tribute to Denzel Levy as well. And later on, they became known as the Brown Shirts, and then they formed this thing called the Ossifer Brandwach. They were all tried for high treason by then who the Prime Minister was, General Smuts, and they were going to be hung. But General Smuts decided no, they'll get life imprisonment, because if they hang them, there would have been an absolute bloodbath in this country. So they left that down. And then when the Nats came into power in 1949, they were all released from prison. Wow. And amongst them was John Foster. I remember he became Prime Minister, and a gentleman called Vandenberg. Right. Now, Vandenberg was a constable in the police force. But when he was released, and with John Foster, and John Foster became the Prime Minister of South Africa, you know, he succeeded Hans Strijdom, then immediately Foster appointed Vandenberg and became a general overnight. So you talk today about what's happening. Well, nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. And overnight, and he became what they called the head of the BOS, the Bureau of State Security. Now, why I'm mentioning this? Because there's an inquest going on at the moment, at this very moment now, about this Ahmed Timol, who they don't know. They said he was committed suicide, but we know he was pushed from that building.
Well, you know, you're raising this idea of fake news. Yeah. That's the current term, and you know, Trump is really attacking CNN as fake news. I mean, many Israelis think that CNN is extremely against Israel. So maybe this is Hashem giving them makos, you know. But fake news has been around, I guess, since the beginning of history. And but I think it's accentuated now because of how fast media is. and you can put up anything, and you say there's an anonymous source, and you don't really look into it, and it's a protocol zone. It's with us. The question becomes, how do you deal with it, and how do you know what's true and what's fake? Just this General van der Berg, if you remember, that case, that incident in Fox Street
siege
with Potter.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it about 1974, 75?
74. And let me just tell you something about that.
Van der Berg was the one that negotiated with him.
No.
Is that the same Van der Berg?
Yeah. Same that Van der Berg is. But let me tell you about Van der Berg. When they were negotiating, Van der Berg, Solly Sachs was there because I had him in the studio, and Van der Berg wasn't interested. He's going to blow up the building. That's what he said. He's going to blow up the building. So everybody panicked. I mean, here, this took place on the 10th floor in a building behind the Coliseum buildings. Imagine if you blow up a building, all the other tenants in the building around them would be killed. So immediately, they contacted Yitzhak Una, who was then the ambassador to South Africa.
Israeli ambassador.
Israeli, yes. And Yitzhak Una immediately phoned Yitzhak Rabin, who was then Prime Minister, and he phoned John Foster, who was then a Prime Minister in South Africa. And John Foster immediately contacted Van den Berg and said, don't you dare do that. You know, he was ready to blow up.
He was ready to blow up the building.
He was ready to blow up the building. They brought in all the ammunition and everything.
I was not aware of that. I thought he arrived there in his car and did this negotiation and was over in 10 minutes.
He was ready to do that. And that's that same Van der Berg.
Do you remember the doctor who was involved?
Yeah,
there was a picture. I think he had to get changed.
And he actually had to take off all his clothes except for his underpants on. And he went into the embassy because he found there was the security guard. Israeli security guard was a guy called Raviv. Because I remember I did.
Raviv, yeah.
Raviv. I did his funeral, I remember. But the funeral wasn't a burial. We took after a few days later, the body was taken to West Park Cemetery.
So he didn't die in this hospital.
Yes, he was shot. He was killed.
He was shot.
Yeah, Prota shot him. Prota shot him. They thought the Japanese had taken over, but Prota shot him, and he's dead. And a few others were injured. This doctor went in. And we did the funeral
to attend to the wounded.
To attend the wounded, okay. Yes. Well, once they.
Do you know who the doctor was? I know.
Yeah, let's see if you remember.
Dr. Gottlieb.
Gottlieb, that's
because
it.
I tell you why, he's his daughter, I think the physiotherapist, was part of our group in high school.
Yeah, right.
And there was this heightened tension because I don't know how Gottlieb was there on the scene. But I remember a picture. I can clearly. What are you talking about now? 43 years. I can still see that newspaper clip, the picture of this Dr. Gottlieb having to strip down to his underwear to get in through a window.
Yeah,
right. To attend. But that fact, I wasn't aware that someone had been shot.
Right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, I mentioned the 100th birthday of Denzel Levy. He's in Port Elizabeth. He's the doyen of the community there. Full clarity, he's just been honored by the Queen as well. And I've done a full story. It'll appear in the...
You say he's a 100 years, full clarity.
Full clarity.
I mean, he knows everything. Time of day.
As a matter of fact, a few months ago, he did a funeral for some friends of ours in Johannesburg. That's Jonathan Herring and his mother, the late mother. And Denzel did the funeral absolutely perfect.
He came up to Johannesburg?
No, in Port Elizabeth.
Port Elizabeth.
Port Elizabeth.
He took a funeral?
Yeah, he took a funeral.
At 100 years
old. Wow. Unbelievable. Wow. But I'll mention all about him just now. So we're talking about the Fox Street trial. Remember David Prota, he held everybody hostage. He shot the security guard, a guy called Raviv. And inside there was
That was where the Israeli consulate was.
The consulate was.
In that building, Fox Street.
And the consulate's name, the consulate general, was a gentleman called Arya Bustan. I'm sure many of you would remember him. And eventually they negotiated, they came in, and as you mentioned, Dr. Gottlieb came in with his underwear, examined him. They found Raviv had been shot dead. One or two of the other people were wounded. And, you know, I'm not going into all the other details. And then, as I said, we did the funeral at West Park Cemetery, not a burial, because he was flown to Israel to be buried. So we had a memorial service, and then his coffin was covered with an Israeli flag. And you know, the consulate or an embassy are considered as if you're in Israel. Because
you got that status.
The status.
Yeah.
That's why we did the funeral here, funeral service. He was buried in Israel. And I remember the late Rabbi Aloy Zatzal, he spoke at the funeral and he said, you know, he died on Israeli soil. That's what it was. Now, I'm coming back to this because we mentioned...
There was a trial.
Prater was sentenced to life.
This is 40 years. What has happened? Has anybody...
Well, Prater was released from prison when Nelson Mandela became president. There was amnesty. But Prater has since died. He died.
Yeah, he has died.
And by the way...
Did he leave South Africa? Well, that was 94.
No, he didn't leave. And Prater's brother, Charles Prater, was also in Saudi there. But he wasn't involved in it at all. He was involved there. So why I'm mentioning this, because General van den Berg, as I said, originally from the grey shirts, the brown shirts, also from Brandwijk, they all sympathized with the Nazis. And then van den Berg was appointed Chief of Bureau State Security, and they weren't at John Foster Square. They were in a building called the Greys. I'm sure many remember it was corner van Willig and Main Street, right across the road, the Sunday Times offices. I'm sure if you remember, if you go down there. And they used to just bring these anti-apartheid prisoners or whatever they were and just throw them out of the window. That was van den Berg. And as I said, he wanted to blow up the building. But now,
just one more. What actually happened to van den Berg after 94? Did he die before?
He died. He died afterwards, long years.
Sure.
And why I mention this, because Denzel Levy was 17 years old when this took place in the shul in Port Elizabeth, where they planted, and as you said, fake news. Now, if you don't know what the protocols of Elders of Zion is, it's all about the Jews taking over the world. Economics and everything, politics.
And that conspiracy still exists today. I think this whole thing with this public protector, attacking the Reserve Bank.
Yes.
The person, I think his name's Goodson, also believes
that the Jews
control the banking world. And
yes.
So that like gene just goes from one generation to the another.
Yeah.
Probably started with Asaph, but it's a different story.
Right. I just want to mention that. So, as I said, Dendel celebrated his 100th. He got a letter from the Queen. I've got the article in front of me, but we'll come back to that later. And I just wanted to mention about the Grey Shirt. I've written all about the Grey Shirt trial and how they won it. And as I said, Nachum Sokolov was here. And there's another story I want to talk about.
In fact, I think just announced this week is the Jewish Board of Deputies.
Hate speech. This guy
also won it.
Yeah, they
so
won it.
It's the same theme. It's just this.
This chap was from the Cusato.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got 30 days in which to apologize.
Yes.
But I doubt if he
will. What happens if he doesn't apologize?
That's the trouble. Well, he's got to pay a fine. But I don't think they'll even pose that or something like that. You know.
But yeah, it's a moral victory.
A moral victory, but it doesn't mean a thing. It absolutely doesn't mean a thing. So the other thing I want to mention is, now, I mentioned a story on, not a story, a true incident on Tuesday when we were talking about the yahrzeit of the late Rebbe Rebbe, and it was also the yahrzeit of Reb Aaron Kotler.
Kotler, yeah.
Now, I'm sure many of you remember Aaron Kotler. Now, remember,
give us a brief synopsis, because many people probably don't.
Yeah.
When you just place him in Jewish history.
He was the leader of American Jewry.
Yes.
He founded the Lakewood Yeshiva,
right,
which is the biggest yeshiva in the United States.
Yes.
He came from Europe. He was recognized as the Gadol HaDor of that generation. He was succeeded, by the way, by Reb Moshe Feinstein.
Right.
Now, Aaron Kotler, the news had come through in 1940-41, that of the concentration camps and the what were taking place. And Aaron Kotler approached Kennedy, who was the American ambassador to the United Kingdom. And he said to him the following: can't you please arrange, and don't forget, America just entered the war because of Pearl Harbor. Can't you please arrange to bomb the railway lines that were taking these, what they call cattle trucks, to the concentration camps? And Kennedy turned around, and by the way, I must mention this in inverted commas, Kennedy was an absolute rabid anti-Semite. He absolutely...
This is
The father of John Kennedy in that day.
Yes. He was the ambassador.
The ambassador of the United Kingdom. And he said, we cannot waste bombs on railway lines. We will not bomb them. And Aaron Kotler said, my people are being annihilated. They're being massacred. And you can't waste bombs. He says, may you and your family be damned.
Wow.
He didn't say curse, but he said, be damned. And the rest is history. John F. Kennedy assassinated. Robert Kennedy assassinated. One brother flew in a plane. They never knew what happened to him. Mm. One of the daughters died in a motor car accident. Mm. And that's it. But there's another story about Aaron Kotler. And I'm indebted to Joan Smith. I met her, the Harper, the other day. And I want to mention this. News also came out during the war that there were 24, after the Holocaust in 1945, there were still 24 rabbis incarcerated in an Italian prison, because you know Italy was part of the Nazi Mussolini. They had were allies, and Aaron Kotler was very perturbed and he wanted to get them free, and he met a very close friend of his called Irvin Bunim.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you heard of me. He did that book called The Ethics of the Fathers.
It's a blue cover, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's three volumes in the brown.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
I've got the blue copy.
I must tell you, I personally met Irvin Bunim.
Oh, yes.
I knew him well.
Is he still alive?
Well, no, when I met him, he's since passed away.
Yeah.
And Irvin Bunim said to Reb Aaron Kotler, there's only one way we can get them out. You must approach the mafia.
The Italian mafia in New York,
because this was in they were imprisoned in Italy. So,
and there's the Italian mafia also who now were controlling part of the mob.
Like you have La Havdil, yeah, the Guptas controlling, yeah, the mafia were controlling America.
State capture is not just a local phenomenon,
right? So they both went to see Joe Bonanno, who was then the godfather of the mafia. And they explained the whole thing to him, and he was very impressed. And the head of the mafia, Joe Bonanno, said, give me a blessing. And he gave him the following blessing.
Because I think he was introduced as the godfather of the Jewish people.
Yeah, he was told. And he gave him the falling blessing.
So let's just picture this scene for the viewers. Imagine you're in a room now in New York City. You've got the Gadol HaDor, this rabbi, probably with a long beard and dressed in black and payers, and then sitting opposite him, you've got the Godfather, the Italian Godfather, who, you know what Godfathers do. They give a command, someone is killed, or they run prostitution and drugs and all things
and
like
liquor,
that.
And
liquor. Now, you've got these two in the room with this Mr. Bunim, probably as a translator.
Yes, he was translating.
Okay, so this is an amazing scene, Isaac. This is what we must keep in our mind. Okay, so what went on? What was that conversation that went on?
It went as follows. Tell him he is the Irvin Bunim introduced Rabbi Kotler as the godfather of the Jewish people.
Yes.
Really asked the mafia chief. Yes, replied Mr. Bunim emphatically. Tell him I want a blessing. That's what the God
said. So the mob, Godfather, wanted a brocha.
Yeah. So Irvin Bunim turned to Rav Aaron,
yes,
and in Yiddish told him, er will a brocha von dem Rav.
Yeah.
He wants a blessing from the Rav.
Yes.
Sag ihm, er soll leben lang und sterben in Bett.
What does that mean?
Irvin Burning turned back to the mafia, Joe Banana, and told him, the rabbi blesses you with long life and you should die in your bed.
In the bed.
Not shot, not assassinated.
That's
why I want to mention that, because, you know, amongst the mafias, they would walk in, one of the bosses would be sitting in the barber chair, and suddenly a whole mob would walk in, and they would shoot the mafia boss. Or they'd slit his throat. The barber would have been paid a couple of dollars, slit the throat, you're shaving him. But here the barber
was the assassin. Okay.
Yeah. And remember, there's that famous St. Valentine's massacre, but that's a different story. So he gave him the blessing that he will live long and he'll die in his own bed. In other words, nobody will ever touch him. And turning that, the mafia boss turned around and he liked what he said, and he promised him that in 2 weeks, the 24 Rabbonim in Italy would be released. So
what we have here is we have the mafia boss who runs New York, let's say, or parts of America, gets a brocha from a rov who's just met. And he likes the brocha, which is that may you live a long life and die in bed, which is a beautiful brocha, by the way. And for that brocha,
he releases.
He's going to set his team.
Put in motion, which release all these 24 rabbis
who are in Italy.
Yeah, and they were all released. And then this rabbi, the Joe Bonanno, lived to the age of 97.
Yes,
and he died in his own bed.
He didn't convert.
Nothing ever happened to him.
He just
now, 20 years later, in 1964. A shiny black limo pulls up at Lakewood Yeshiva in New Jersey. Two fancy dressed men get out and walk up to the office. They're looking for Rabbi Kotler. Out comes a man who introduces himself. No, not you, say the two telling guys. We're looking for an older man. That was my father, says the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Shneur Kotler, but he passed away a number of years ago. The Italian men explained that they are Banana brothers and that their fathers always attribute his long life to your saintly father's blessing. Now that you're just retired, we're taking over the business and we come here for the same blessing. I'm sorry, says Reb Shneur, my father could do that, but I'm not on that high level. So that's exactly what happened there. He said, you know, I'm not on the level of my father. I can't give that blessing. Now, I read a story the other day.
Can I just mention this, is that I've heard stories here that there is the Israeli mafia. I mean, I think every country has a mafia.
Correct.
There's no perfect country in the world. Israel has a mafia. Italy has a mafia. Our kingdom has its mafia. We have our mafia. Through all the racial groups, there's mafia. But I did hear, I don't know how true it is, that there was a godfather who did walk into one of the places and ask for a brocha before one of their plans
would go.
And it's quite amazing that in the mindset that these mafia, and I've met a few through my practice, drug lords, that some of them are the nicest people. You can go and have coffee and a lunch with them and you wouldn't suspect, but there's a ruthless side to them that is quite incredible. They'll take people's lives out. They don't keep people, become drug addicts, whatever. They just are ruthless. But there's that nice little shine to them that you would not suspect. And this is what we have here, is who knows. Okay, lived to 97. But I guess if we looked into his CV, how many suffered.
Yeah, correct.
How many people have suffered because of his edicts. But then one can say, well, government's much better, but that's another story.
You know how the mafia started? It started off in Italy, where the different families had different, you know, the quarrels and etc. But there were two groups in Italy. One came from Sicily, and yes, they were called the Costa Norica, the Cosa Nostra. And the other one was the Mafia Propla. And there was terrible clashes. They just killed themselves.
But, you know, I just read a day or two ago that in Sicily, the economy is so bad that the Mafia have actually moved to Germany, where there's much more business opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would, yeah.
So I just want to mention that. We're not talking Lashon Hara. Okay, about Chabad. Well, let's stop this hatred. This is not hatred, what we're talking about. Someone says we're talking about hatred. How many men? Oh, no, that's something different there. Okay. But it was not the outside of Rabbi Kotler. It was of his son. But why I mention Aaron Kotler is because of this Kennedy blessing, curse or the damning, and, of course, of this saving 24 Jewish lives. Now, I'll mention another thing.
Is any historical record on those 24 rabbis, what happened to them? I mean, that would be an obvious question.
I don't know.
So they were released, and where did they go, back into Europe, or did they emigrate to America or to Eretz Israel?
This text we just received, we don't mention the Rebbe. But if you tuned into Tuesday's program, the past few days, I spoke a half an hour on the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I gave all the publicity. I spoke what he's done. I even mentioned the rabbi who came out to speak was Rabbi Lou. And then there was a rabbi the following night who wrote a book on the Chabad. So it's not that we're ignoring the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's also one of the greats. And I did mention these were two of the great Gedolim in America. Now, I just want to mention, divert completely, how a lot of people misunderstand this. There was a little shtetl in Lithuania called Jutian. And the rabbi there was a Rabbi Eisenstadt. And it's not far from Kovna, Utian, U-Y-T-A-N. And a woman came to him. He was busy giving a shiur. And she started nagging and nagging him. Where's my husband? I want my husband. He's disappeared. What's happened to my husband? And the rabbi just ignored him. Eventually he gave in. And she told him what had happened. And the rabbi thought for a moment. He says, go to Kovna. That's all he said. Go to Kovna. And a few days later, it came through that the husband, the Tsar of Russia, were busy arresting and conscripting all men for the army, that this husband of hers had been conscripted in the army. So that rumor got around the town that this Rabbi Eisenstadt was a miracle he could predict. And Rabbi Eisenstadt, and you know, in Europe in those days, the rabbi only spoke twice a year. He never gave a shiur on a Friday night or on a Shabbos morning. He spoke Shabbos HaGodol and he showed on Shabbos Teshuvah. But that Shabbos, he called the whole community and he made a drosha. He says, I just want to tell you that I did not perform any miracles. All I knew is I was told that the Russian army are conscripting men in Kovna. So I suggested that the wife goes to Kovna. Maybe she'd find the husband there. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah. So we're taking a break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. We just tuned in. We were talking about the great Gadolim and, you know, what they've done and how they, well, they weren't miracle performers. They did have certain vision, certain Ruach HaKodesh. Let's call it that. You know, I can even tell you that the late Rabbi Aloy Zatzal, you could sit in front of him and he had a certain ruach about him. You felt that you were in the presence of a godel. And sometimes he would tell me certain things and somehow they just became... They just became part of you, you know, without, and he didn't even know you if you met a person. And you yourself have mentioned, Jonathan, if you would walk back from shul with him and talk with him, he'd start talking about this one and talking about that one. And tell you and give you insights into all this.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, just to change it slightly, but maybe just expand what you're saying is that, you know, Rabbi Sacks, he writes his Covenant and Conversations.
Yes.
And for me, the one that he wrote on this parsha, Chukat, called Descartes' error. Descartes was living a few hundred years ago, and he divided that we have two. We have like a soul and we have a body. And there's been much criticism about that, that it's actually all integrated. But I'd just like to read what Rabbi Sacks starts it with as follows. In his recent bestseller called The Social Animal, the New York Times columnist David Brooks, which I strongly, he also wrote on character, he writes, and this is fascinating. We are living in the middle of the revolution in consciousness. Over the past few years, geneticists, neuroscientists, psychologists, sociologists, economists, anthropologists, and others have made great strides in understanding the building blocks of human flourishing. And a core finding of their work is that we are not primarily products of our conscious thinking. Listen to that. We are not products of our conscious thinking. We are primarily the products of thinking that happens below the level of awareness. Now Rabbi Sacks says, too much takes place in the mind for us to be fully aware of it. Timothy Wilson of the University of Virginia, he estimates that the human mind can absorb 11 million pieces of information at any given moment. We are only conscious of a tiny fraction of this. Most of what is going on mentally lies below the threshold of awareness. And this is Rabbi Sacks. And of course, you mentioned it was Sigmund Freud, but we all know that. So when you talk about these Gedolim, for example, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rav Kotler, Feinstein, Schach, all of them, it wasn't on the surface. It was what was below the surface. And it's quite interesting when you say Rabbi Alloy, it's not what he was thinking consciously. There's something that's coming out of his mind, of his body, that gives a certain radius. It radiates. So if you're picking up 11 million bits of information, most of it, maybe 100 is conscious, but most of it is unconscious. And the whole field of science, from different points of view, is saying that our conscious thinking is the tip of the iceberg. So the question then becomes is, how do you create that deep unconsciousness? And that's through what, for example, what we're talking about is discussions, and through memories, and through life experience. And Elkanon Goldberg, another neuroscientist, Russian, who ran away from Russia in the 1970s and lives in New York now, he says he's written a book called The Paradox of Aging. Is actually to gain wisdom, which is this depth of the unconscious, you have to become old. You have to age. You can only get it through life experience. So when you're talking about Rav Kotler and all these Gedolim, is besides their magnificent memory systems, they lived every moment as probably as their last. You know, every moment counted. They never wasted time. They weren't distracted. They built up this let's call it the unconscious, or the part of us that we're unaware, but it comes out when they make decisions. That part is activated, like their software is activated to come up with the best possible response.
Right.
So it's very interesting what you're saying when you bring up these characters and these great people, and of course there were great rabbits, and there were a wonderful woman, and that have developed this. This what I think is the height of humanity. It's not flourishing per se, that you've got material and all, you know, that kind of thing. That you just got this depth of understanding and this wisdom, and you understand the world at different levels than what's just on the reality. And now what we've mentioned is this fake news, which you started with.
Right.
It's just how do we develop that awareness to say that this is possibly or most probably fake and this is truth. And we have to be very, very careful about the media now. So if we just talk what's happening in fake news in South Africa, if I can say this, I once led to a leading commentator who really is in the heart of this. And he's basically saying all this news that we're getting with the Guptas is a fight for the soul of the ANC. And I don't know if you read yesterday, they are now bringing in different protocols.
Correct.
That there can be no booing. They're trying to control this, and no leaks. because they do know that there's this massive battle, two factions, Zuma and this other anti-Zumas, that are, and it's coming out in these leaked emails. So if you understand it, and that's what wisdom is, if you understand where it's coming from, then you're not so affected by it on the surface.
Right, we're taking a break. We're back in a moment.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So if you just tuned in, we're talking about all the great Dolim and the visions that they had. And it wasn't that they were prophesying. They just, as you said, that inner conscience, that feeling, they had something about them. But
so you brought up a new word. I think it's my word for 2017, called cold fire.
Cold fire.
Is it?
Chief Rabbi Louis Rabinowitz described Rabbi Eloy as a cold fire.
Yes.
Outside, you looked at him and you felt cold. You know, you didn't think. But inside, he was burning.
Yes.
He was burning.
So according to this is the neuroscience, and this is all this optimal brain health stuff that I'm looking at in depth, and I write on my website, is that the emotions are hugely important. This drive to be rational is, and rationality, and to get rid of emotions is very, very dangerous. And we have people who have brain damage, for example, to the emotional centers of the brain, and they become automatons. They you can't live with them. They can't fulfill their goals. Emotions, you're talking about that fire, that cold fire within, that's not rational. That is an energy. That is an emotion. And enthusiasm and passion and excitement, these are emotions that move us, not the rational. We're not computers. Humans are not machines. And in Judaism, I find that what I'm really drawn to is these memories and these great people and the vision and the goals and these magnificent ideas that are very difficult to trillion, like Olam Haba, a world to come, reward and punishment, you know, brochas. How do you understand this on the surface? You don't. And this is the problem if you try to rationalize things. In chukim, I'd like to get your take, a chuk is something that you can't understand.
Yeah, well,
so a person who cleanses somebody becomes unclean themselves. I remember Rabbi Harris giving a drosha on this. He says he couldn't have, the Rambam, I think, could never understand
I'll
this.
I'll tell you who. King Solomon, who was the wisest man, said he cannot understand the rationale between the chukat, where the person who makes you pure, he himself becomes impure.
Mm.
That was that was King Solomon.
So take another one. Shatnas.
Yes.
Where's the rationale that you can't mix wool with linen, or, you know, cotton or whatever? Kayelim, you can't mix seeds. Where's the logic? And in fact, where's the logic for kashrut? You can't eat meat and milk together. There's no logic. I mean, billions of people around the world mix meat and milk on a daily basis. So why has the Torah given us these chukim, which is we must do them, but we'll never understand? And I think what Rabbi Sacks is saying is the point is that the rational mind is a tiny part of us. There's a deep underlying unconscious part. And that's what we need to recognize. You just can't rationalize everything.
Do you know, you mentioned about kashrut, but do you know that, you know how milk is formed in a cow? From blood.
Mm.
The blood turns to milk.
Mm. But it starts off with it's grazing the grass that moves into blood, that moves into milk,
and moves into milk.
In this chukim is the chuk is death, life, and death,
right?
And we need to know the difference. And Jews do not get involved in this whole process. We bury quickly. It's a quick. We talked about what happens at West Park, but in a very interesting way, is milk is about life. I mean, babies you built on milk, meat. You can only eat meat if the animal's dead.
Correct.
It's one of the seven Noah laws. You can't take a limb.
You can't take a limb.
Eat a limb of a living animal. So an animal has to die to eat the milk. You can milk a cow, and the cow doesn't die. So that's life. I mean, the milk is full of lots of nutrients and proteins and all kinds of things. So we don't want, the deeper meaning is that you don't want to mix life and death.
Correct.
Because meat is death.
You know, the other thing about you say about a hook, you know, we also read about, you know, the goat, the Azazel.
Yes.
Where they're going to take the goat to a cliff, and the goat gets thrown over the cliff, and that atones for all the people. But the person who leads the goat, he himself becomes impure. He's not atoned for.
Yes, yes. Now, was it last week? Was it Korach?
Yes.
So I picked this up, and no one could answer me. Is that, okay, Korach, there was a whole story. And what actually with Korach, the earth opened. And then he and his family and his slaves all died, and his possessions. Then the next thing is 250 people were killed. They burnt.
Right.
And then there was a plague.
Correct.
And 14,700 people died. Now, I said to my chaverim, I spoke to the rabbis, is, what's going on here? Why just not Korach? Take Korach out. Why the 250? Why the 40? It's a chok. We don't understand it. And that is, we talked last week about humility, and it just came into my mind. I think Isaac, you were like this. Humility is also the ability to say, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't understand it. Arrogance is always trying to find an answer. But a truly humble person will say, they have a tremendous knowledge and understanding, but they have the ability to say, Isaac, I don't understand.
Correct. You know, I said last week, I quoted, small is big. If you admit and you say, look, I don't understand it, you become big because you're not becoming arrogant, you're not becoming conceited. And then on the other hand, you have greatness is humility.
Mm.
And the greatness of some of our, well, Moshe Rabbeinu, the most humble man on earth, but some of our leading rabbis, the Gedolim, were so humble. Rabbi Eloy, I can mention Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the Chofetz Chaim, very, very humble person.
Mm.
You know, he lived in a home. They said his furniture was like soap box furniture.
Steinman, yeah.
Yeah.
So Rabbi Kurtzduck is, he's close to 80, but he's been learning for about 70 years. And he used to learn with Rabbi David Goldfein.
Correct.
Now, I used to see them at Yeshiva Gola almost every afternoon learning. And I said, Rabbi Kurtzduck, I thought you knew this. He says, Jonathan, there's so much I don't know. And that is the greatest example of Torah. You can't say, okay, I've got 52%. I know I've passed, and that's it. With Torah, with our Israeli parallels to the depth of our brain, that we can. There's so much depth to our minds and our brains that we never can fully fathom.
You know, I'll just quote. You said you don't know. Good. Well, in now, the famous Greek philosopher, his name was Euripides,
yes.
And he had a pupil called Euclid, and he told Euclid, I don't know, you know, do you know everything? He says, I don't know anything. You know why? Because you learn from your pupil as well.
So it's ani lo yodaya. That's in Hebrew. What's it in Greek? Do you remember the Greek? I don't know.
I don't. I'm going to look it up. I remember.
Okay, you're being humble, Isaac.
Okay. Yeah. Just to remind you that Shabbat 5:09, Motzei Shabbat 6:01, the Pasha Chukat. Sunday we have the Art of the Cantor between 4 and 5. And I'm paying tribute to Chazan Yosef Malavani. I'm sure many of you remember. He was the Chazan at the Yovel Shul. He's just been honored into the Jewish Hall of Fame in America, which is very, very unique for a chazan. And also, I'm going to honor to commemorate the engagement of Avi Salatan. I'm going to play one of his CDs as well. Just to thank Craig for controlling. Go well. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Enjoy the week. And this program, by the way, is repeated on Sunday between 9 and 10.